public safety is much on the minds of Alaskans lately. A recent UAA Justice Center study looking at staffing of Alaska State Troopers in just one area of the state found a severe shortage and recommended a nearly 60% increase in trooper numbers. But what about other areas of the state? How does trooper staffing affect public safety? We're looking at state law enforcement and what may be on the horizon for addressing crime today on Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. When it comes to challenges for law enforcement, Alaska's enormous geographic range, coupled with a lack of a road system, means it can take days to respond to some areas. But even on the road system, inadequate numbers of troopers in some regions is further complicated by the difficulties in keeping those who are trained on the force. Here to discuss some of those challenges and possible solutions is Colonel Hans Brinke, Division Director of the Alaska State Troopers. And hi, thanks for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Colonel Brinke is with us. Sergeant Doug Massey is the union president for the Department of Public Safety chapter.
Yep, Public Safety Employees Association. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for being here. And also, Lieutenant Derek DeGraff is the head of trooper recruitment.
Good morning.
Hello. Thanks, all three of you, for being here to talk with us. You can also join our conversation, Alaskans. Do you live in an area that lacks law enforcement? Have you seen changes in the rate of crime in your community or in your neighbor's perception of safety? What do you think should happen to address it? Give us a call at 1-800-478-8255. Statewide, that's 1-800-478-8255 or 1-800-478-TALK. If you're in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. So, Colonel Brinke, I want to start with you and have you give us sort of a general overview to start off. Some communities have police forces, some do not. How do the troopers work with local police, and when do you take the lead?
Well, currently, the state troopers have jurisdiction throughout the entire state. There's a couple of spots like Metlakatla and some of the federal areas that we do not have jurisdiction, but it doesn't matter where we're at in the state, whether we're in the city limits of Anchorage or Wasilla, we still have jurisdiction to enforce state law. But we primarily stay out of the city areas because they have that primary responsibility for servicing their community. So anytime it's outside those jurisdictions, that's ours, and we'll take care of that. Or there's opportunities when some of those city entities will come up and ask us to take a lead on a particular case or assist them with other issues they may have.
Can you give us some examples of when that might happen?
Some investigations that may be internal. Let's say, and I'm not saying that there's any particular ones that are going on, so I'll just say maybe there's an officer-involved shooting case in a smaller community where we would take the lead on something like that to make sure that it's being investigated, you know, at the request of that local police department.
Sure. There are five service areas or detachments, as they're called. The study that we're discussing is particularly on Detachment B, the Matanuska-Susitna Valley area. But what's the current status statewide, and how do public safety needs change in different detachments?
Well, right now we have approximately 45 vacancies, and that's within the Division of Alaska State Troopers and the Division of Alaska Wildlife Troopers. Both memberships are Alaska State Troopers. We just have different focuses, but at the same time, we can enforce the laws for wildlife or the other criminal laws that are here. So statewide, we've got the 45 vacancies that are running around. So it's kind of like this. You've seen one of those little toy games that you have. It's got a picture. It's got a missing square. You have to move the pieces and parts around to try and come up with that picture. That's kind of what we're always trying to do right now until we get our retention issues dealt with and our recruitment back up. We're constantly moving around that empty slot. So as the detachments are either being filled, another detachment has a vacancy. So after a certain amount of time, We're looking and evaluating what the caseloads are, how many people are missing from a region, and then we start bidding for different positions to fill those regions. Part of this is just, it's dependent on the time of year. Summertime in some places are busier than others, so we're always evaluating what the needs of the state is right then and there. We'll put a bid out, and when you move a bid, depending on where the successful senior bidder comes from, we'll then create a hole in another detachment. And unless you have, you know, every one of your positions filled, you're always going to create a hole by moving someone around.
45 in just that detachment or statewide?
And that's statewide.
Okay.
So, and right now, just in B detachment alone, last I look, they are right about full up. And that's just with the authorized positions that they've been given. But you've also made comment about the staffing study for the Valley, which has already indicated that we need a 57-58% increase of staffing to maintain the needs of the public out in the Valley.
So what's been budgeted for your full, for the positions that are budgeted, but the study is saying we need to add more. Am I characterizing that correctly?
That's accurate.
And how, when you look at the staffing numbers that you have, it's about one trooper per 1,000 residents. Is that about right?
I think it's a little bit more than that, depending on how many guys you have. I'm going to say it's 1 to 2,000 is more accurate in the Valley, depending on how many guys we have on shift at that particular time.
That sounds, and I'd like to get Doug Massey and Derek DeGraff in here as well to in this conversation, but that sounds like a really low number, one trooper per 1 to 2,000 people. How does that compare nationally, and what are your thoughts about just, I mean, I'm thinking about a trooper going out and maybe, we had one of our reporters went on a ride-along recently, and he was with a trooper who had to go to a party of teenagers, and there was a lot of people there, and the thought of that getting out of control with only one person responding just seems like the risk to law enforcement is elevated in those circumstances.
It absolutely. When you're going by yourself, you definitely have to be on the top of your game watching what's going on around you. You know, we're talking a party, and you never know really and truly what's happening at the party, alcohol, drugs, things like that. So you definitely, firearms could be there. You know, people might be compliant. You might have aggravated people that are there, so you're always having to watch what's going on around you. So in a large situation like that, one trooper by themselves, yeah, it's definitely a safety risk.
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska. We are talking about public safety in our state, and my guests today are Colonel Hans Brinke, the Division Director for the Alaska State Troopers, Sergeant Doug Massey, who is the Union President for the Department of Public Safety Chapter of the Public Safety Employees Association, and Lieutenant Derek DeGraff, who is Head of Trooper Recruitment. So let's get Doug and Derek in here. What are your thoughts about these numbers that we've just been discussing, and what do you think needs to happen to address them?
Well, just listening to you two talk, I jotted down some notes here, and APD just increased their force to 400 members, and they service population of, I want to say, about 350,000, could be give or take a little more. If you compare that to the Valley, which is between 100 and 110,000 population, there's a few small police departments within that area, but you have about, I want to say, 40 troopers, Colonel, is that about right, in the 30, Valley?
36 right now.
Okay, 36 that service an area of 100,000. So you compare 350,000 population Anchorage, give or take, you know, between 300 and 400,000. They have 400 police officers, 100 per 100,000. 36, I've been corrected, 36 troopers for 100,000. That is disproportionate. It's unsafe for the troopers. It's unsafe for the public. What have we been doing to try to increase and help out with the situation? PSEA, we've been down in Juneau every week, you know, talking to the legislature, explaining these problems. We've used everything from the recruitment and retention study to the UAA Justice Center study that was just released. You know, all of this information that says the same thing: we need more troopers. 45 vacancies, soon more to come, I've been told by some of our membership. It all creates a very unsafe situation for everyone. So I think everybody is on the same page when it comes to the department, the governor's office, the legislature. We all know what needs to happen. It's just making that happen at this point. So we've been down in Juneau telling them what we need, telling them what has been identified as the two major problems in recruitment and retention, which is competitive benefits and competitive wages. Those are the two main things, among other things. There's monetary and non-monetary things, but to get people in the door, you know, you get what you pay for, and you've got to pay to have a civil society. So, you know, that's where we've been focusing our efforts, is improving those pay and benefits so that we can fill those 45-plus vacancies.
And I want to talk a little bit more about the benefits issue in a bit, but I also wanted to put the numbers back out there. Please join our conversation if you have comments or questions about public safety in your community. Do you live in an area that lacks law enforcement? Have you seen changes in the rate of crime or in the perception of safety in your communities? Our number statewide is 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. If you're in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. And Lieutenant DeGraff, Derek DeGraff, you're involved in trooper recruitment. You head that up. How difficult is it to recruit people into Alaska State Troopers, and how does what's offered here compare to other places, other troopers in other states?
Sure. So I've worked in the office for about a year, so I'm trying to wrap my head around the nuances to hiring people, understanding human resource rules and regulations. But at the end of the day, there's a couple different groups of people that we look for or typically find. Some have wanted to be an Alaska State Trooper for a good part of their life. They know that's what they want to do. They work towards those ends. Those are the small group of people that it's easy to recruit. As soon as they come to us, we don't need to find them. We don't need to advertise to them. So there's a small group of people out there that's who they want to be. It's the other group that's much larger, that they don't know what they want. They have maybe considered a career in law enforcement, haven't given it much thought, but they have a heart of service. They want to serve. A lot have come from the military. And so that group, that's the hard group, trying to identify and explain to people, you don't have to come to us, you know, as a trained police officer or member of the armed services. We hire people from different walks of life, and we try to explain to them, you know, you don't come to us as a trooper. We will train you. So that's really the part, the folks that we're looking for that have a heart of service, a good background where they have good communication skills, good references. So those are the folks that we primarily target. We have seen our numbers just over the past year quadruple in terms of applications. So it's encouraging.
Why? What do you attribute that to?
Getting out, advertising significantly more, attending lots of local job fairs. The recruitment office does it. A good many of our state and wildlife troopers, when we have events in different parts of the state, they go and attend a job fair on our behalf. You know, our best recruiters is not the two troopers that work in the recruitment office. It's our troopers in the field. It's all of our troopers that give ride-alongs to the people. The two troopers that work in our recruitment office were both products of a ride-along 17 years ago. We had an interest. We went and did a ride-along. As soon as we did that, we're like, yes, this is what I want to do. And so we understand that is a powerful tool to get somebody that's considering law enforcement to just go ride along with a trooper to hear it from them, from him or her, what the job is like. So that in totality, along with advertising, is how we're growing our numbers. It's about customer service. It's about talking to people, meeting with them one-on-one, spending time on the phone with them, really trying to educate them about the pros and the cons, just being honest about the good and the bad, you know, and the stresses that come with the job and the challenges, but also the rewards that come with it in terms of fulfillment.
And talk a little bit about what the training is, and Colonel Brinke, maybe you'd want to get in on this also. How rigorous is it, and what should people know about, well, I'm kind of thinking about a career in law enforcement, I'd like to be a trooper, but I'm worried about what the training involves and if I would be able to be successful in that.
Right. I can start off with part
Colonel
of that.
Brinke,
the training, once you're hired and you're given a job offer, you go down to Sitka. You join the Department of Public Safety Training Academy. It's a little bit different than when I went through it 27 years ago. It was a little bit more militaristic when I was first there. It's an ALIT academy, so we have a combined group of not just troopers, but other municipal law enforcement officers at the same time. It's an educational environment. But you also have to go through, and as you're learning the book portions of it, the constitutional laws and all that, but you're also going through the physical fitness portions of that at the same time. You do work out every single day. You go to class all day. You learn how to shoot the firearms that are associated with our trade, different aspects of defensive tactics. So there is some physical requirements that are involved in this at the same time. So it's like sort of boot camp and college all at the same time. But they do foster that educational type of atmosphere. It's not as intense as what it used to be. And I think that's a really good thing that we've done over the years. After you graduate from the academy and you go back over to your first assigned post, and then you spend the next 15 weeks in a field training a slot with several different FTOs. You'll have a primary and two follow-up, and then you get evaluated at the end of the FTO program. And that's I'll push that back over to Derek because he actually watches over the field training part of it. And if he wants to add to part of that, that'd be good.
Yeah, so the training academy in totality is 18 weeks. And like the colonel said, it's changed over the years. It's a fun environment. You know, you're up at the crack of dawn. You're doing the fitness. There's scenario-based training to help you interact with role players and developing your talking skills. That's what a big portion of the job is, being able to communicate well with people. And there's testing involved. And there's plenty of free time that people get to be able to study and get on the phone, FaceTime with their family. But yeah, you're living on our campus, our facility down there. We provide the room and board. We pay full wages while they're there and full benefits. And it is a mixed group of local police officers, village public safety officers attend, as well as Alaska State Troopers. And then, yeah, once they roll into that field training process, the goal is to train somebody for success. Our FTOs, our field training officers, their goal isn't to wash out people or to make it hard or difficult. It is to equip our brand new recruits. It's to be able to mentor them, train them, bring them up within our culture and to be able to learn our culture and what law enforcement is like in Alaska. It is different than many places in the country, so we try to communicate that. Set that example during field training. At the end of that 15 weeks, most people are very successful at it. I still remember the day when my supervisor came to me and shook my hand, congratulated me, handed me the keys to a marked patrol car to take home on my own. And it's just a very vivid memory I have, and I know a lot of our troopers have that.
Well, I want to go to the phones. You can join our conversation at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. In Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. We're talking about public safety in Alaska, and we've got the leader of the state troopers, the union president for the Public Employees Association, the public safety chapter, and also the head of trooper recruitment in the studio with us today. We're going to go to the phones now. Jeremy is in Alpine. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. Did you have a question?
Yeah, I was just curious if you might be able to elaborate a little bit when you guys were talking about numbers per capita of troopers in the valley versus Anchorage. But when you're talking about Anchorage, you referred to police officers. In the valley, you were referring to troopers. I thought there was a police station in, like, Wasilla, a large police station.
Yeah, this is Doug Massey. I was the one that brought that up. I also mentioned in my earlier comments that there are two small police departments within the Mat-Su Valley. I don't have the numbers for Wasilla. I think Palmer's about 15 police officers, and Wasilla, I want to say they're around 20, maybe 25. Would you know, Colonel?
I think that's about right.
Yeah. So you would take away, of course, you know, those communities. I think the city of Wasilla has about between 7,000 and 10,000 people. Palmer, I'm guessing less than that. So you would certainly kind of deduct those police officers from the equation. But I think, you know, once you run those numbers, you'll find that they're very low. They're still very low. Minus those two communities.
Okay. That's all I was calling to ask. I just was wanting you to clarify a little bit for me. I appreciate your time.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for the call, Jeremy. You can join us, too, if you'd like. If you have comments or questions about public safety in your community, about the perception of crime, have you seen increases? Are you concerned about the trooper levels, the numbers of troopers in the state? Or in your area, in your community, give us a call, 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. Locally in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. I want to get back to the study, but first I wanted to follow up on something that you had said, Colonel Brinke, about that the training has changed, that it's not as militaristic as it was. That caught my ear. What's changed about it and why?
I think the atmosphere has just kind of changed. You know, back, you know, 27 years ago, it was more of that boot camp environment. But trying to train an individual is, you know, when you're throwing things at them on a constant basis, stresses you out. But relaxing the atmosphere and having scenario-based training and making it more of a fun environment, you start learning a little bit better. And that started, I don't know, maybe, 15 years ago or so, that we kind of changed the way we're conducting business at the academy, and it's had a lot of good success.
Hmm. Are there, and Derek, maybe you can address this too, it seems like there would be advantages to throwing a lot at someone and kind of stressing them out on purpose, because a lot's going to come at you in a job like this where you're going to have to think in a split second. And I'm sure that you're all well aware of how people like to armchair quarterback things after it's happened, having not been in that moment when you have to make that decision. So talk a little bit about finding that balance between wanting to make sure people are up to that challenge of being in a really scary situation where you have to make a life or death decision, but not freaking them out so much that they wash out and can't make it through the training. How did you find that kind of that sweet spot for training?
Well, let me start this way, and then I'll let these guys kind of jump in on it. If I gave the impression that it's not stressful, oh, it's stressful. I mean, there's a lot of material you're going to be fed with a fire hose that you're going to have to try and retain. But then when you're trying to retain it, when you get to the FTO program, you have to remember everything that's there while you're still learning more. Getting up and doing your exercise in the morning, that can be a de-stress, but then again, you're learning as you're doing your physical fitness. So it is a stressful environment because you do have to learn a lot, but it's just the way the atmosphere in there is more towards, we want to make you successful. We want to provide you with everything that you need. If you're having difficulties, come talk to us. I'll be honest, when I first started, did I take my woes to my squad leader and go, I'm not feeling so good today? Oh, no, I did not go to do that. And I'm not saying we're trying to coddle anybody, but at the same time, we do listen to the needs of our people that are out there. And that's something we're trying to continue to do, not just at the academy, but all the way up through the ranks of troopers who are out in the field to today, is making sure that we're looking and trying to take care of our guys. So I'll let these guys take a shot at that one.
Doug?
What I've seen over the years is when I went through 21 years ago, you know, there was a lot of scenario-based training. I'm sure there still is. I haven't been to Sitka in years. So a lot of that meant to kind of to evaluate how you react under a stressful situation. But one of the positive things I've seen and been part of, I'm actually a FTO sergeant right now with a recruit that's going through, is we have transitioned more towards a training program, field training program, rather than back in the good old days when I went through, and probably these two as well, it was more of an evaluation-based program where an FTO would sit back and watch you and wait for you to make mistakes. Now, I think our FTOs are trained more to actively engage and train, not just sit back and wait for folks to make mistakes, but actually, you know, walk them through things. Not necessarily let them make mistakes and then beat them up after the fact. You know, walk them through each phase of what they need to do to be successful. So I think the department has done a better job at transitioning towards training rather than evaluating only.
Yeah, Derek. I would agree with that. And I would say the training hasn't gotten any easier. Just the way that we present the material is different. The training there, I mean, our instructors, we send them to national trainings throughout the country. We travel to other police departments throughout the nation, look at other academies, looking for best practices. So we implement those things. But ultimately, the atmosphere, while it is hard, it is challenging, it's highly rewarding when you walk out of there and graduate. It's a phenomenal thing to watch. I've been there many times as an instructor. Years ago, I've been there as a role player throughout the last few years, and it's always fun to go back, talk to the recruits, encourage them along, prepare them for what's coming. But we do throw a lot of challenges. There's a lot of training, and at the end of that training, we sit down with them, not in an embarrassing way, and say, here's what you did well, here's what you need to work on, here is why, let's do it again tomorrow, and let's make you successful. And so the model that we use there is one, it is a training regimen that is hard, but at the same time, it is very supportive.
Well, let's go to the phones. We have Andy in Unalaska that has a question about trooper training.
Hello. How's it going this afternoon?
Good.
Morning here. Yeah, I believe that you guys have superior training to a lot of other police agencies, and I think with tensions, you know, between the police force and the public, especially in the lower 48, at kind of an all-time high, or at least that's what it feels like on the media there. Is there any way to export your trooper training to other agencies in the lower 48? Or, I mean, I know we have a lot to do here, and you got a lot of ground to cover here. But you guys have superior training. Is there any way to bring that to other agencies or even charge other agencies?
This is Colonel Brinkley. Let me try and take a snap at this one. We would love to import those people into our training program up here in Alaska and keep them here. I'm not sure that we can provide that training down south. It's kind of an interesting thought. We do have a phenomenal training program that's here, and I'm going to put the kudos where it needs to go. We've got a training academy staff that is phenomenal. Lieutenant Gayden runs that ship down there. His corporals and his non-commissioned staff down there are phenomenal. They're engaged with all of our recruits that are there. And, you know, just going to the last graduation that's down there, you know, I was watching Lieutenant Gayden at the very end of the graduation. His comments are, "Welcome to the family." He means it when he says it. I mean, you can see that on his face. That's how engaged they are. When they're engaged with their recruits, they train their recruits well. And so you're absolutely right, and I thank you for the compliment on superior training. I'm not sure that we can send that down south, but if you know someone that's down there that wants that superior training, we're recruiting. We'll be happy to take their name and bring them back up here.
Doug, you wanted to get a comment in as well.
Yeah, I'm glad Andy recognized that because I believe it to be true. And, you know, and I hope I'm not going to make you mad here, Colonel, but other police departments down south recognize that. They see that training as some of the best in the nation, and they are actively trying to cherry-pick our people from our department. And it's, you know, having that exemplary training and top-notch training has kind of been a curse, so to speak, for us lately because, you know, I just read an article the other day how departments are becoming so competitive. They are actively, you know, raising the bar incentive-wise, benefit-wise. In fact, one of the police officers, well, he was a trooper up until about 3 weeks ago, he got a signing bonus. I mean, it's become a competitive marketplace. Departments are getting very creative in how they advertise and how they try to attract people in and, you know, our high level of training has been somewhat of a curse lately because these departments come to us, they know what our standard is, and they know that they're getting someone good. So we need to stop that somehow. And all three of us put our heads together. You know, we can come up with something, hopefully.
All right. Well, thank you. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation about public safety in Alaska with members of the Alaska State Troopers as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by ConocoPhillips, investing and exploring on the North Slope and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, and today we are talking about public safety in Alaska. We have Colonel Hans Brinke, who is the Division Director for Alaska State Troopers. Sergeant Doug Massey is also here. He's the Union President for the Department of Public Safety Chapter of the Public Safety Employees Association. And Lieutenant Derek DeGraff is the Head of Trooper Recruitment. And Colonel Brinke, you wanted to follow up a little bit about this challenge of having great training, which is terrific for Alaska, but also means that people are trying to woo our troopers away.
Absolutely. I mean, Doug was making the comment. No, I'm definitely not mad. I'm concerned. And I'm not going to say that our troopers are better than any other law enforcement group within the state of Alaska. We're just attracting a certain type of person who wants to be an Alaska State Trooper, and it takes a certain type of person to want to go. And we get on snow machines, boats, planes, you name it, and we're out in the field doing different things that a lot of other agencies don't do. And once you attract that type of personality and we train them with our training academy, that person becomes hugely marketable down south, which led me into, you know, a story that just occurred not too long ago. We had a trooper that had applied for another agency, and I happened to be in a sandwich shop out in Wasilla, and I was talking with one of the staff members there, and she happened to be the girlfriend of one of our other troopers. So I was kind of talking to her a little bit, and then the guy right next to me says, "Oh, you must be the colonel. I need to talk to you." And I'm like, "Well, I don't know who you are." He goes, "Well, I'm the recruiter from down in Washington to talk about so-and-so." And so we ended up having our interview right there, and he asked the questions. And the only thing I can say is you're getting a phenomenal trooper, well-trained, very dedicated. The integrity is huge. You'd be dumb not to take the guy.
It
cuts our throat, but I can't say anything other than that because we're always going to support our people, you know, in making the best decisions that goes for themselves, their families, and all that, because that's always a priority that people have to remember throughout their careers.
Absolutely. Let's go back to the phones for a moment. Chris is in Anchorage. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
I know you guys touched on the recruitment there for a second. I was just curious if you guys had any almost like a job fair thing maybe set up for some of the guys coming out of the military. I just thought there could be some added benefits with that, you know, maybe save on some local money benefits because they'll have the VA for their medical and whatnot, and they're obviously already trained, you know, different field, but trained in that sort of thing.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Derek, I'm sure you'd like to respond to that.
Yeah, that's an excellent observation by Chris there. We hire a significant amount of former military personnel here in Alaska, and then folks from the lower 48 who were stationed in Alaska and consider Alaska home and want to come back after they get out of the military. We spend a considerable amount of time on base attending job fairs, attending transition assistance program meetings. If there is a job fair to be had, we want to and we attend those. We spend a significant amount of money on advertising on base, both on websites, pop-up ads on web browsers if you're in a certain zip code, signage inside the gym, those electronic ads, billboards that you see on bases, targeted Facebook ads. We spend a lot of money because there's a lot of, in terms of efficiency and bang for the buck with the marketing, there's a huge amount of personnel. They understand service to the country. They're used to a structured organization. They tend to do really well as Alaska State Troopers. So that is one of our core demographics that we've identified. And so, yes, we actively pursue those people. Every hiring cycle, we have former military in it. They are great.
We have an email question, someone asking to have you discuss the age, you know, ideal age for recruitment or who you're looking for, how you go about recruiting females and wildlife troopers.
Excellent. So first one that stuck to me is female troopers. We actively look for females that want to join the Alaska State Troopers. We attend. There's several events. Most of them tend to be in Anchorage where they're geared towards women that we send our female troopers to. We also craft ads. We have a video series we're working on right now highlighting our female troopers to target just the female demographic. We actually have we'll have some hiring decisions this week on a new batch of recruits for our July Academy, and it's one of the highest female to male ratios we've ever seen in this group. So we're seeing success there. So that is encouraging that we're going the direction that we need to go. What was the second part of that question there?
Looking for age. Kind of age okay. You're hoping to attract?
So you have to be 21 years old statutory in Alaska to become a police officer, state trooper. So we have people that are 20 years old that can apply with us as long as they're going to be 21 by our next training academy. So we will hire 21-year-olds as long as they're going to, you know, have their birthday line up with our academy training. Our average age that we hire is typically around 27 years old. And that is for a whole host of reasons. People transitioning out of the military, as I spoke to earlier. Some of those folks, they have better life experience. We see that better hiring success because when they come in and do our testing, they have that experience, communication skills to fall on, so they do better. So you can be, we have a guy at the academy that's in his 50s. He's maintained his fitness. He passed our fitness test, incredible life experience that he'll bring to our organization. Doesn't mean he's going to do 20, 25, 30 years with us. So we will have literally a 21-year-old and a guy in his 50s. I won't throw his exact age down, and a lot in between. But those that are young to mid upper 20s tend to do well. But we have people in their 30s and 40s, all walks of life, attending our academy.
And how about diversity? How do you go about trying to have a force that more accurately looks like the population that we have in the state, which is certainly very diverse?
And that's always a struggle. It has been a struggle for the state troopers for many years, trying to make our demographic look like the demographic in Alaska. And the hard part is because we're such a decentralized organization with 40 different plus offices throughout the state. Every little nook and cranny of Alaska is so different. And so we our troopers move at least one time in their career, if not multiple, if they choose to do that. And so with that rotational cycle, and our troopers moving around, it's hard for that diversity to match where they're moving into. But what we try to do is actively target, now with advertising that I learned about, you can just target demographics with electronic media ads. And so that's what we do. We do specific for Alaska Native as well as women and military. Those are the big three that we try to focus our ads at to try and drive up those numbers and make it look more like the community we serve.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Merrill is in Anchorage. Hi, Merrill.
Hi.
You have a question?
How are you? Well, I have some comments here. my community is on the road. I drive a lot. And I personally worry about having more troopers on the road. because to me, especially in the lower 48, a traffic law enforcement officer is the most dangerous person on the road for me, for my well-being, because he doesn't understand driving well enough, as much as an experienced driver does, and they're apt to give out citations from that perspective, and it's very dangerous for us who are experienced drivers.
I'm not understanding what you're trying to relay here. What do you mean by it's dangerous for drivers to get ticketed by law enforcement?
Well, they give out tickets that are unjust a lot of times. We spend so much time on the road that our exposure to troopers and policemen is so great that we get citations that are very unjust and ridiculous sometimes. And with more troopers, that gets worse. I mean, the problem isn't bad now, but I'm worried that it'll get like the lower 48 states where our exposure is so bad. And like I said, that there's no more threat to me than the traffic law enforcement officer on the road. He's more of a threat than anything else on the highway. We've learned to cope with all the other things, but we can't defend ourselves well enough from them because driving has not been verbalized quite as well as it should be.
Well,
especially like you say, there's troopers coming out that are going to be 27 years old. A 27-year-old doesn't have very much driving experience.
And okay, let's let them have a chance to respond here. Merrill's raised a question about feeling unsafe having law enforcement enforcing laws on the highway.
I'll deal with this one. Because prior to becoming the colonel and the commander out in the valley, I was actually the commander of the Bureau of Highway Patrol. So that was the statewide unit that dealt with traffic safety in partnership with DOT and other partners throughout the state. We dealt with the four E's, you know, engineering, education, enforcement, emergency services, and obviously we're the enforcement portion of it with education. And we're always looking for poor driving behavior. We don't just pull over anybody just because we want to. We actually identify someone who has violated traffic law, and we pull that individual over for it. And our primary goal is not necessarily just to write a ticket, but it's always to sit there and change poor driving behavior into a positive driving behavior. When the Bureau of Highway Patrol came out, I mean, it was a very significant unit that was out here statewide. And having that enforcement opportunity out there actually drives down the number of fatality crashes and major or serious injury crashes that are on the highway. So when we had the funding, we had that ability, we were driving a lot of those major crashes down on our big highways. And those crash numbers are starting to come back up because we're not on the street as often as we should be because, one, again, we're talking about our manning issues out in the valley. We're going call to call. And that's just, you know, and I pick on the valley because that's where our staffing study is. This is a statewide issue. Without having enough manning means you go to call and you're not doing as much proactive traffic enforcement. And without that enforcement, your crashes go up. And that's just something that we see. And, you know, our individuals are trained on traffic laws. And we're not just out there, you know, because we do or do not have the same skill as an individual. That's kind of subjective. You know, there's a lot of very professional drivers out there that's what they do for a living. But at the same time, we spend a lot of time in our cars as Alaska State Troopers, and we do have some skills.
Well, and how often are you responding to, I know I've called when I've seen someone who was driving very erratically, and I have concerns for not only their safety but other people on the road. Have they been drinking? Are they under the influence of something else? Or is something medically wrong that maybe they need help? So I'll call and say, here's a license plate. How often does that happen that may be driving these checks too that Merrill's concerned about?
Well, I know that when we get the calls, and it goes back again to staffing that's out there right then, and we refer to, you know, a drunk driver that maybe going down the road, someone's going to call it in. If we can get a trooper that breaks away, depending on what information is being presented to us, can we get to that area and still be able to find that car? Because a lot of times we'll get someone call in, here's a license plate, they're heading north. By the time we get to the area, they could be another 15 miles away in a different direction. There's times when we have people that actually will follow, and then we can actually make contact with the individual that's in the car. And yeah, at that particular time, we can figure out, is it because someone is impaired, whether it's on alcohol or drugs, or they have a medical condition? That happens quite regularly. I mean, I haven't ridden in a patrol car driving down the street. Doug is an active sergeant, whether he's wildlife or not. Doug, you want to take a shot at that one?
I agree with what you're saying. A lot of times we'll respond to those, and they're distracted driving, people on their cell phones, texting and driving. It's distracted driving month this month, I believe, isn't it?
Hmm.
So, we at the academy, they receive some of the best driving training there is. So, I went through it at 21, and the amount of time that I spent in my cars made me a better driver. You're driving in some of the worst conditions out there. So I would kind of disagree. I think that, troopers on the road, high visibility prevents far more dangerous situations than it creates. So I would disagree with that caller.
You can join our conversation, 1-800-478-8255. That's statewide, 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, it's 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back in a minute.
Today's program is underwritten in part by Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
I want to get back to the UAA study. I've got a million questions about rural Alaska, too, that we're not getting to, but it is going by quick. It always does. The study found from 2009 to 2015 that troopers responded to an average of 48,000 incidents per year. That sounds like so much. But while the counts stayed relatively consistent, there was nearly a 15% increase in the amount of hours spent per incident. What's going on there? What's driving this increase in time?
Well, it kind of depends on the type of calls we're looking at. Out in the Matsu Valley, a lot of the opioid issues are out there. Then also the property crimes. So spending a little bit more time on individual cases that are there. It's kind of odd because there's times when our guys will go to a burglary call, and by the time they walk into the house, they're already being contacted by dispatch saying, can you break and go to the next call? Mm. We also have a large area that we have to cover out in the Matsu Valley for driving from one place to the next. So that's that unobligated time versus obligated time. We have court that we deal with. We have report writing that we have to deal with. There's a lot of things that go into just one call. So it does take a little bit more of our time to deal with those.
The study also found a sharp increase in trooper hours spent on property crime in 2015, particularly burglary and vehicle theft. Talk about that. Is that still going up? What are you seeing as far as the numbers in those types of crimes?
Right. And I alluded to that. Our property crimes are still going up on a regular basis. We're spending a lot more. And I had made comment about the opioid issues. A lot of the drug activity that's out there is linked to property crimes. An individual who's going to want to get their next fix, go out and buy some more drugs. They got to be able to get the money from somewhere if they don't have a job that's able to support that habit. So we are seeing more of those property crimes, whether it's just the burglaries, vehicle thefts, stealing from someone's yard, different businesses that are out there.
What are you hearing from the public? What does fewer troopers look and feel like to them? What do you hear about their perceptions of safety?
Right now, it just kind of depends on where you're at, but the overarching thing is we don't feel safe. It takes the troopers a long time to get to us when a call comes in. Not having enough troopers to respond to every call that's there isn't something that we like to hear, isn't something that makes us feel warm and fuzzy. It actually is kind of a stress and a drain on us at the same time that we want to do the best job that we can. But the amount of calls that come in, we have to actually prioritize what kind of call comes in. and decide which one gets to go to first. So if we're talking a person-on-person crime versus a burglary, we're going to go to the person-on-person crime first. That may take a couple more troopers. Instead of going one trooper to a domestic violence, we're going to send a couple people to a domestic violence or a gun call versus that property crime. So we are constantly having to prioritize. And then we may or may not be able to get back to that particular original call in a timely fashion. So that does irritate, you know, the public, because they have a standard in which they believe that we should provide a service to them. But we also ask them to understand where we're at. And we, you know, when we prioritize, there's a reason for that.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phones for a moment. Stefan is in Palmer. Hi.
Hi. How's everybody doing today?
Good. Great. Did you have a question?
Yeah. Is Colonel Brinke there?
Yes.
Hey, Colonel Brinke, this is Stefan out in Palmer. The last time I ran into you at the Valley Cinema, you were still a captain. So first off, congratulations on your promotion.
Thank you.
I do a lot of work with special needs kids. I'm a paralegal. So I have two questions for you. Do you have a mandated program that your troopers go through to deal with autistic people, autistic children and autistic adults? That's my first question. My second question, and I'll take my answers off the air, is before the oil tax, the level of oil taxes were reduced, did you have enough funding at that time? Has your funding gone down since the oil taxes have gone from 30% down to about 14%?
All right. Thank you for the questions, Stefan. And that is a good lead-in. The autistic question is certainly important, dealing with people that have challenges that may not be readily apparent by their physical appearance. How do you train to deal with these situations?
Well, right now we've got Sergeant Spitzer, who's down at the DPS Academy. He does have a crisis intervention class that he has bolstered. It's a really nice introduction to mental health, behavioral health, autistic, different issues that we may encounter as Alaska State Troopers. Taking that one step further, being the commander out in the Matsu Valley, we created the Crisis Intervention Coalition with all the first responder partners out in the Matsu Valley, which was all the law enforcement, the hospital, the Matsu Health Foundation, the court system, the DAs, and other providers that were out there. We come together and try and figure out what are the needs of the community. And we ended up training mental health first aid, which was through the UAA consortium that they provided that mental health first aid, try and get it to as many different people as we could to give them that introduction. And then since then, we've also had a 40-hour crisis intervention course where individuals go to that, learn how to identify issues, how to interact with individuals who are either in crisis or have autistic syndromes that are out there or any other mental health issues. And we're going to be having another one out in the Matsu Valley in October. The Anchorage Police Department has them, and also Fairbanks has them. So that's something that's really high on my list, and we're trying to push that.
All right. Thanks so much for that. And I want to get to the funding issue in a minute, but let's stick with the phones and hear from Charity in Anchorage about another form of dealing with the public, language diversity. Hi, Charity.
Hello. My question is, do the troopers, or what do the troopers do in their training protocol and dealing with people who maybe don't speak English, and it certainly isn't their first language? How do you interpret what the person may be trying to tell you, and how do we as citizens help if the troopers need interpreters? Thank you.
Thanks, Charity. Derek, did you want to take a shot at that?
No, that's a good question. I guess I would turn around, just like she would experience going to the store and running into somebody that's clearly speaking another language, our troopers will try and use some hand signals. We don't train our troopers at the academy in other languages. This is not practical. oftentimes we'll try and indicate for somebody to produce an ID or documentation so we can actually see what nationality, what country they are from. And then we just use interpreter services that are available throughout the state. So we have phone numbers we can call and try and identify a language, connect an interpreter on the phone with people. There's a high amount of folks that don't speak English as their primary language that come here, seasonal workers in the summer, tourists. So we utilize those services. In terms of being able for her to be able to help, she could call our department offline here and we could try to connect her.
All right. Thanks for the call, Charity. Let's go quickly to Pat in Homer. Hi, Pat. Can you give
us... Hi, good morning.
Yes,
thank you.
Quick question, please.
Yes, just a couple of comments. What is it that the public can do to support the state in providing you the resources you need to do your jobs more effectively? And then second, I just want to vent a little bit about my frustration with not having the availability for some of the low-level offenses that occur within the borough. I'm in Homer, just outside of city limits. And, you know, if there's these low-level offenses that are occurring, they take kind of a lower priority than maybe some of the higher offenses. So that's it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. We only have a minute or so left. What can the public do to show support? Doug.
This is Doug from PSCA. Call your legislator. That's the best way to grab attention if you have a concern or a problem, you know, for a specific area. We've had very good luck reaching out to our local legislators. A lot of them don't know what's going on because they're busy working in Juneau. So bringing that to their attention is your best method to try to get some resources focused your way.
We'll have to bring you back because I wanted to talk about the VPSOs and how they are sort of a force enhancer in rural Alaska. But I did have an email question about boroughs. We don't have counties. We don't have sheriffs here. But we had a question from Tom in Fairbanks. Should the legislature force boroughs to assume police powers? Is that something that you would support, or do you not want to wade into the politics of the question like that?
Well, I think it's an interesting question. Depending on what level or what class borough you are, you have the opportunity to establish law enforcement in there if you're first class borough. And thanks for making your comment. Yeah, this is an interesting thing that I think our leadership above my level can think about and maybe provide that kind of answer in the future.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have. We'll have to have you come back so we can talk more about law enforcement in rural Alaska and the needs there. Thank you to my guests, Colonel Hans Brinke, the Division Director for the Troopers, Sergeant Doug Massey, who is the Union President for Public Safety Employees Association, and Lieutenant Derek DeGraff, Head of Trooper Recruitment. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Support for Alaska Public Media comes from Matson, committed to the communities it serves, building on 130 years of reliable lifeline cargo transportation to the Pacific and over 50 years of service to the communities of Alaska. Learn more at matson.com.
This program is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400. This is Alaska Public Media.